I'm trying to talk to you.
Okay, I'm listening.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 5, The Impostors. And now, here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hello, listeners. Before we get into this episode, we want to tell you what's going on in the club. This Friday, July 10th, we'll bring you Again With This, episode 295. Let's watch Lisa Rinna in Running Point. I said it right. I do not say it right every time in the episode because we have already taped it. That is season 2, episode 3, titled Triangle of Badness on Netflix. It's a fun time, and you should join us and listen to that discussion.
Yes, the club is a fun time. Speaking of the club, we are sunsetting the $2 Patreon tier on September 1st. If you want to remain in the club, you will have to upgrade to the $5 tier before then. This is not something that's automated. It doesn't cancel for you. It doesn't automatically upgrade you. You got to go to the club, cancel the $2, and sign back up at the $5. We hope. Thank you in advance if that's your choice.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not, we apologize on behalf of Patreon for making this excessively complicated, but you do have to proactively take care of this. If you have questions or need help, you can email Dave at david@cole.fyi. That's david@cole.fyi if you need help. Again, with this podcast.com/club for that and a whole bunch of other info.
Just to make it absolutely clear, if you don't cancel the $2 Patreon tier, we can't do it for you. Patreon will keep you there and just not deliver you any perks. So you will keep paying and not get anything. And it would be great if we could cancel that for you, but we can't. You got to do it.
Yeah. Sorry.
Sorry.
But thanks.
For Patreon.
But sorry.
But sorry. All right. Let's start The Impostors with our C-plot. Jack's student-teacher relationship gets messy. When Jack joins Jen in Freeman's class, she wants to know what happened after they got separated at the party in the previous episode because it's 2002, texting doesn't exist yet, and the question does not really rise to the level of a phone call, I guess, especially since Jack doesn't want to talk to Jen about what happened anyway, as becomes evident when he says Freeman is straight, and even if he wasn't, Jack would not get involved with him. Jen seems like she doesn't believe it, which is when Freeman comes running in late, noting that his TAs are there to hand back the papers that are worth 20% of their grade. Clip 2.
Unless, of course, you'd prefer to sit here for 50 minutes staring at them while I drone on about representations of the single father in pre- and post-Vietnam American television.
Is that a joke? It's not funny.
Like, do they have a choice? It's class. They right. have to listen to you drone on.
About Vietnam. Indeed. Freeman adds that he reviewed all the TA's grades himself, I would hope so, and that he is prepared to field complaints. Jen gets a B+ and is happy. Jack gets a C- and is appalled. And as class is winding up, Jen says there has to be some kind of mistake if her grade is higher than Jack's. Clip 3.
And you've actually been working hard all semester.
Yeah, well, apparently not hard enough.
Yeah.
Where?
I guess that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Jack brings his paper to the front of the class before he's even turned all the way around. Freeman jokes that it must be another unsatisfied customer. I thought that was you, giving absolutely no indication that there's anything at all between him and Jack. But Jack decides to keep going anyway. Clip 4.
C minus seems a little low for a paper that you enjoyed.
I said that, did I?
Yeah, you did the other night.
Of course. What I meant was I really enjoyed the content. Your grasp of structure, on the other hand, is quite rudimentary. I can recommend a few books that might help with that. However, I do have another class I need to get to right now.
Yeah, sure.
You know, a C minus really isn't all that bad, Jack. You told me yourself you weren't a very motivated student.
Well, I guess I thought I was doing better this term.
Well, maybe your expectations were too high.
Wow. So he's a sociopath.
Thank you. I had the same note. Oh my God. I don't want to diagnose anyone, but Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's cold. Just wave him through with a B. This isn't hard. Better at being bad.
Again, this isn't hard. And that's the problem. When Jack finally gets in to see him at office hours, Freeman's already packing up his shit, saying he didn't think anyone else was out there. After snarking about how long it takes Freeman to get through all his adoring fans, Jack gets right to it. Clip 5.
If I hadn't been so shocked about what you said to me the other night, would the C-minus have been any higher?
Low blow.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm just trying to make an informed decision here. And if that's what this is all about, hell, ask me again, because I might just say yes this time.
Oh, damn!
Jeez. Yeah. On notice.
Mm-hmm. Also, low blow. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Let's keep going. There's more. Clip 6.
I don't know what to say. Sometimes people read too much into things.
Too much? How about too little? Because I'm totally willing to go through.
I get it. I get your point.
You know, it's one thing to be some scared teenager, afraid of his friends, his family, afraid of what everybody he meets might think and say about him. You know, I can forgive that. Hell, I can expect that. But you're an adult. Okay, somebody's married to you. You're ruining lives here on a much larger scale.
What can I say? Not everyone's willing to make sacrifices for some sort of political agenda. Not everybody's willing to spend their lives being part of a despised minority.
Yeah. Well, if that's true, maybe you should ask yourself who's doing the despising.
Okay.
That you're despised because you're an asshole who's transactional in his grading.
I also feel like Jack today would just assume this guy's bisexual and he and his formerly purple-haired wife are open, which maybe would solve a lot of problems if they were, but it's not on the table in 2002.
We're not there yet as a culture. Yeah.
Somewhere in campus the next day, Jack's getting coffee from an outdoor stand when Freeman drops his paper in front of him. Now it's a B. He heard you, Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Since Jack left it in his office, he decided to read it again, or for the first time, let's say, and admits maybe he did let his emotions affect his grading. If he did, it's inexcusable. Clip 7.
I sense an excuse coming on here.
You have no idea, do you, of how much the world has changed?
Like, if the world's changed, it's because people are willing to stand up and be honest about things, not hide behind things that are easier.
When I was growing up, when I was, how did you put it? A scared teenager. You didn't have gay kids coming out to their parents on MTV.
Yeah, and Jack Tripper was the only gay man in America, right?
You think that's such a small thing? Such a minute cultural difference? Maybe you really haven't been paying attention to my class, Jack.
Okay.
I think it's so weird to frame this as Freeman struggling and being afraid versus him being content to sort of be behind the picket fence and then have another secret life and make students pay for his shame and secrecy and then act like a gelid sociopath about it when they call him on it. I don't know. This story is dumb.
And also, this actor is not good enough to put it over either.
Correct. That too.
Jack mutters at Freeman to have his TAs grade Jack's papers from now on, and Freeman agrees, drifting off. Jen joins Jack, excited to see Jack and Freeman have a moment together, but clip 8.
She's getting that thing with my paper straight now.
Oh, yeah. Is it?
Straight? Yeah. Perfectly.
I get it! Jesus. Yeah.
Also, don't fucking cover for him. Also, Lindley, that's too much boot for a weekday for a college student. Bring it down a couple inches.
On to the B plot. Dawson deals with lady hassles on the set of Todd's movie. After the previouslys remind us that Dawson did meet Heather Tracy, played by Nicole Bilderback in the season 5 premiere, we're in the bar at the St. Regis where a very drunk Todd is trying to flirt at Natasha, who is patiently enduring it. When Dawson joins them, she peels off to get some sleep before their big day tomorrow, Todd slurring when she's gone that if Dawson were better with women, he might be joining her. Todd tries to leave himself, but Dawson, for some reason, thinks Todd's in a state to have a serious work-related discussion right now. 10 stakeholders want to know what Todd's plan B is for the next few shoot days. Todd says there isn't one. At the very least, Todd needs to quit dodging Heather's calls. They're 3 days behind and getting financially penalized. There's no shot list for tomorrow. There's still a 70% chance of rain on Friday. And still, Todd has no plan B. He does, however, have a pack of smokes and a lighter in front of him. So I guess Dawson has given up that part of his job as cigarette police. And then suddenly Heather is behind Todd. She thought they were 4 days behind. Todd tries to distract her by introducing her to Dawson, but she says they can exchange pleasantries later. Right now, she needs him to work his PA magic to get her the better room the front desk already denied her. She tosses Dawson her metal room key. It's 2002. I don't think the St. Regis is still on those, but I've never been to Boston.
No.
On set the next day, Heather is storming around, yelling at people into her headphone mic, Todd muttering to Dawson that it's not even noon and she's already fired people on three continents. Apparently, she has also demanded an egg white omelet, although Dawson has, for some reason, only managed one egg and two whites. When Todd meekly brings it to her, she's still in no mood for pleasantries. She snaps that she could live with Todd running over his time and budget if the footage were good, but the studio hates the girl. Shouts to the guy playing the strangler for apparently getting a direct line to someone who could address the problem, since he's the one who seemed to have the biggest problem with Natasha. But they go on, clip 9.
Natasha, Natalie, Nadia, whatever. The one with the nice rack. I know you said he could work with her, but we figure we shut down, we recast.
Hold on a bloody minute here. Yes, she may have been a bit unprepared, but you don't go shutting down an entire production just because...
She can do this job.
What? Hey, sir?
you are fired. What? Yeah. Like, go away.
Grown people are having a conversation. You're not part of this.
Mm-mm.
And honestly, if Todd can't handle this on his own, they should shut down production because that's his job to speak up for it and make the case for his own professional talents, skills, abilities. It's not his creek. So both Todd and Heather freeze so that Dawson can lecture them. Clip 10.
For a horror movie like this to work, the heroine's got to be both sexy and intelligent. Natasha is that girl.
Horror. Horror. Yeah. It's got two syllables. I know it's a tough one, but it's not a horror movie.
Also, is she?
Well, perhaps. Anyway, there's still more. Clip 11.
Why do I care what he thinks?
He's the target demographic.
I'm sure some cut footage we can put some together by this afternoon.
You really think that's going to change my mind?
Couldn't, huh?
Couldn't it?
Well... Before Heather can put Dawson in his place, she gets another phone call and takes off, leading Todd to look at Dawson in terror. Bro, this child cannot help you. Like, you need to do this job yourself. But I'll also say, Heather is one of, I'm going to say, like, maybe four Asian characters who have had lines on this show. It's really not cool for her to be this much of a dragon lady ball buster stereotype.
Yeah. I do love watching Bilderback do it, though, because she does it great.
Yes.
But it's not a great confluence of scarcity and stereotype. I mean, it's not a good stereotype anyway, but...
Mm-hmm. When we return, Todd is cursing out the guy pushing him in the camera dolly. Once he has bitterly called cut, Dawson tells him Heather will be at the gym for a while. PA says that Natasha's done with hair and makeup, so Todd goes to find her, chirping that this is his favorite part of the job. Clip 12.
You don't mean that. Of course I do. Nothing as much fun as explaining that the overpaid hairdos are eminently replaceable, they all are.
Don't you like her?
I do. Not as much as you do, of course. Which may be clouding your judgment on this matter.
Point taken, but how is yelling at her going to help? I mean, you destroy her confidence, the day's not going to go any faster.
Listen, mate. Let me let you in on a little secret. Two-bit horror movies that get shut down 1 week into production don't always get started up again. And if someone who works for me, my continued employment might be of some interest to you.
So you'd fire her just like that?
It's a choice between her and me. That'd be dead easy now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I guess. Well, like, except you have to start all over. Like,
right.
It feels like this has been shooting for a while. They built quite an elaborate set, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. Like, actors, am I right?
Yeah.
Just make sure she doesn't drink. People dealt with this with Marilyn all the time. Just get through it.
Sure. I guess Vanderbeek's feedback on the first few scripts of the season was that Joey was getting too much of a hero edit and he wanted a storyline where Dawson also got to be special and important because he goes straight from here to the unattended wardrobe tent, walking in on Natasha when she's completely topless but seemingly unconcerned. She does kind of like, ooh, It's a little amusing. She puts on an ill-fitting bra. You can see this in the visual aids. If the back is riding up higher than the front, that band is too big. The weight of your boobs is pulling the cups down. Free bra tip from me to you. You're welcome. Get a professional
fitting.
It was
so high.
So like, high.
I'm sure because of her particular boob situation, she didn't actually need the lift.
Right.
But like, the strap was like between the tops of her shoulder blades. It just looked really painful.
It also looked like there was only one hook. And like Heather already said, she's got a great rack. Like she needs more support than one hook.
Yeah, that's a three top job. Come on.
Mm-hmm. She then starts picking up and putting down different shirt options as if this was a decision that she would make. It would not. There's a costume designer. These are predetermined. She asks who Heather is, and Dawson tells her the truth, including what she is concerned about. Natasha can tell something's wrong, and he claims it's just walking in on her half naked. She affectionately calls him a prude and says if they're going to work together, he has to get over that stuff. Dawson counters that she will have to stop walking out of rooms he enters, and she agrees. And then after a beat, says that even though Todd is not a great communicator, she knows she's not killing it, as it were. Clip 13.
That's why I really need to nail this big scene tonight. Help me. My best friend's dying, and I don't know what I'm supposed to be thinking.
Don't think. When your best friend's dying, what are you going to do?
I don't know. Save her? Comfort her?
And that doesn't work?
Save myself?
Exactly. It's don't think. Just act. Just, and when Todd asks you to jump?
Ask how high.
And how far. Just always be aware where the camera is. That's how you communicate with him.
You really think that's going to work?
They're ready for you, Natasha.
Guarantee it.
Okay,
Dawson's the best. Can we move on now?
I mean, it has been a long time since anyone called him a wunderkind, so maybe he really did demand this. Like, I was kind of joking before, but, you know, when Backrooms came out earlier this year, there was speculation that Kane Parsons, who is the credited director, he was 19 when he shot it, like, did not really direct it, and that it was shadow directed by Mark Duplass because he's in it as an actor, and here we have the opposite. We have this movie's Kane Parsons saving the day for Todd. Sure.
Yeah, sure. The other thing that's like so tiring about it, like I don't find Dawson that nearly as off-putting as I have in the past. Like this is a little much.
Yes.
But it is his creek. The thing is that like they're not on the creek anymore and everyone is siloed off from everyone else's stories. And it's just like, what are we even doing here?
Yeah. Fortunately, there's more. When we next see Todd, Heather, and Dawson, they are in an office I guess we're supposed to think is the editing bay, watching the footage that somebody cut together to prove to Heather that Natasha actually is doing a good job. Heather, multitasking on a phone call, says this, clip 14.
That constitutes improvement. Adequate instead of abysmal.
It's not fair.
Shut up! This is not your job!
She was talking herself into it, also. Like, stay out of it.
Yes!
You can't even drink legally.
You sure can't. Heather complains about Natasha watching the ground for her marks and steps away to focus on yelling into the phone as Dawson whines to Todd that Heather barely watched what they showed her. Todd asks whose job he's trying to save. Dawson says he's trying to save everyone's. Clip 15.
So you gotta get her to watch it again, and this time highlight Natasha's strengths instead of her weaknesses. Like, use that close-up and change that music.
Do it. Fast. And you stay here. What's needed now? Some cool professionalism.
That's your job! Jesus Christ!
Yeah.
I am going insane. But Todd gives orders to the editor while Todd steps away to spar with Heather, in the course of which we find out part of why she hates Todd is that he took her to Bermuda and then fucked an exotic dance instructor, because of course a woman could not just be focused on the very real problems that brought her here as a professional. It has to be petty personal shit from when they were fucking. She then re-threatens shutting down the film. Todd reminds her that she signed off on Natasha. That's because she thought Todd could get a performance out of her. And he did, yells Dawson, rushing over to show them the new sizzle reel he just had the editor cut in the last 30 seconds. Clip 16.
I don't know. Before it was all about the location, whereas now it's like we're alone with her and her fear.
What do you think? The odd job could be on the line here too, you know.
Well, I think your little friend here makes a good point.
I'm going to lose it. All of you, get a grip.
Oh my God. Chain of command.
Unreal. Fortunately, we are not subjected to Natasha following Dawson's secret direction. We do have to watch Todd bring her over to meet Heather and Heather fawn over her skin and her incredible work in the scene tonight. With a wink to you kids, Todd walks Heather away. Natasha has correctly guessed that she was inches from getting fired, and when Dawson denies it, she tells him he's a terrible liar. She knows she got this job on a fluke. Dawson says it's because she was talented and was the best person for the part, but she thinks she was just lucky. Dawson thinks that everyone with a soul feels that way about success, and when she asks, he says yes, he hopes he still has one. Natasha reminisces about the party where they met. She had been close to giving up on acting and becoming a kindergarten teacher like her mother always wanted her to be. She felt tortured by working actors bitching about their lives, and then Dawson came over. Why? She was the only hot girl in the room who looked like she had ever read a book, he says. And I would love to knock him for this misogynist line, but I have also said, for example, that Sydney Sweeney looks like if she had more than four thoughts in a day, she would get very sick. So I guess we all have some work to do.
Not you, though. Well, that's accurate.
After Dawson talked to Natasha for a while, he knew that she would be right for the part. And yes, he was also chatting her up. She still can't believe she nailed the audition. Felt like her life was changing. Dawson says it has, and she agrees, heading to her trailer to change and then pausing to say maybe at the bar tonight they could hang out. Which, like, this was a night shoot. I think it's almost morning. The bar is closed, or should be. Hang out when this is all over. You both are loafing too much. Also you, Todd.
Yeah, also Dawson is not 21.
Also that. We conclude with our A-plot. Joey finds out Eddie has a secret, and Audrey tries out riot girlhood. We open this plotline on Joey imperiously smacking her tray on the bar to try to get Eddie's attention. Emma soon joins her, and he immediately slides two bottles of beer to her, continuing to ignore Joey, who is, of course, a bitch about it. But Emma has a suggestion. Clip 17.
We might nail your master if you let me do a little work on that t-shirt of yours. A few rips, a few tears. Do wonders for your tips.
My what?
Your tips. Your gratuities. What did you think I said?
Nothing.
Are you trying to get tips? Cut up your shirt. Sorry.
Yeah. Also, you have worked in the service arts for the entire show. You must know how this works. Why are you a bitch about everything?
Yes. When she's taken off, Eddie ambles over. Clip 18.
Oh, finally. Could you make me wait a little bit longer the next time?
Sorry, I guess I find you a little intimidating now that you've tried to ram your tongue down my throat.
I need two drafts, a Boilermaker, and I thought we agreed to never speak of that again.
You know, I don't remember having that conversation.
We didn't. It was implied. Social conventions dictate that when something embarrassing happens, we all tacitly agree to never speak of them again. It's what keeps us going as a society, that and alcohol.
Yeah, well, I don't.
You don't what?
Don't agree.
You know what? I really don't feel like getting into a philosophical discussion about this. I just would like you to maybe respond.
God, you two aren't fighting again, are you?
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh my God. And so stagily and slowly, like, I'm sorry all these episodes are running short. Perhaps the universe is trying to tell you something about this television program. And not for nothing, but if you never want to speak of it again, Joey, stop speaking of it again. Put your order in and wait for it to come, and maybe don't be a twat.
Well, he's the one who brought it up, but yes, she doesn't have to engage. Eddie, responding to Emma, says they're not fighting. They're apparently having a philosophical discussion. Emma says that's good because she's on her way to band rehearsal. She has a few members left to fire before her big debut at Hell's Kitchen the next night. What is it with bands on this show firing members right before they're supposed to have a big gig? Like, is this also Charlie's band? What the fuck?
Yeah, really.
Eddie offers to put up flyers for her, and she appreciatively pinches his cheek, adding that it's getting crowded, so Joey and Eddie should kiss and make up for the customer's sake. Eddie smirks. This time, Joey accuses him of having told Emma about Joey's sexual harassment. He claims it's a coincidence. Why would he tell her? Joey says he would do it to embarrass her, the most important person in Boston, if not the whole Eastern Seaboard. Eddie says she's doing a fine job embarrassing herself on her own. She glares as he smirks because she fucking sucks. I'm so tired of her.
Oh my God. Worst.
At the apartment, Audrey bobs her head to the music in her headphones while reading a book. Pacey, across the room studying, looks up and smiles at her fondly. She can feel his eyes on her and yells, "What?" He asks how the book is. She shrugs that it's required. As she heads to the fridge, Pacey comments that it's the first one he's seen her open as a sophomore. She changes the subject to the green stuff that Emma drinks in the morning, and Pacey gets annoyed. He's trying to have a conversation. Something seems to have been bothering her all week. She denies it, getting defensive that for her to be studious and quiet isn't weird. He asks if she and Jen got into some kind of trouble at the party, since Jack has said he lost track of them. So, actually, this does timestamp us. The movie's only been shooting for a week.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Anyway, Audrey says Jen just ran into a guy, a regular knight in shining armor. Pacey says this guy sounds just like him, and Audrey quietly agrees. He notes that they're the only two people there and starts to try to get something going, but Audrey pretty quickly swerves his kiss, saying she's kind of tired, and the high-pitched tone Pacey uses to accept that lets us know they are still not okay and kind of getting worse. The scene dissolves to the next morning. Emma trudges to the coffee machine to find the pot and the canister next to it, both empty. Pacey's in the same chair we saw him in earlier, though no, he's dressed and asleep, at least until Emma barks his name. She accuses him of staying up all night and finishing all the coffee again, cueing his speedy monologue. It's not actually that hard to stay up all night. It's just that hour from 4 to 5 that gets you, but it's amazing what your mind retains. He's just found more coffee when Emma hears the shower start and asks if that's his bloody girlfriend. Pacey claims it's Jack, which is when Audrey starts singing California Dreamin'. Emma moans that they talked about Audrey being over there all the time. Pacey would love it if Emma and Audrey discussed this, and he slips out before Emma can yell at him anymore. But when Emma goes to the bathroom to yell at Audrey, she seems moderately impressed by Audrey's singing voice. And then Joey's walking on campus when she abruptly stops and turns around. That looking over from the flyers he is hanging, Eddie tells her she should have kept walking. She tries to help him, which he rebuffs. Clip 19.
Just trying to be nice.
Well, don't. I liked you a lot better when you were surly.
Did you?
Okay. None of us like her at all, so you can have her. Take her off screen, please.
She primly says she thinks they have both been acting a little immature since the incident. When he pushes back on we, Joey says she knows she has. I don't know how she can tell the difference. She is like this all the time and has been since they met. Also, the incident is what she called her dispute with Dawson over him sleeping with her when he technically had a girlfriend. So I think we're looking at incident inflation here as to what rises to that level.
Totally agree.
Eddie tells her not to back down like that. If she does it in class, Hetson's going to eat her alive. She sarcastically asks when Eddie's going to be gracing the class with his presentation, and he changes the subject. If she thinks he's being a jerk, she should just tell him. They jointly recap the circumstances surrounding Joey kissing him in the last episode. Leave it to the professionals. Also, you covered this in the cold open already. And then she asks if he's coming to the class. He is not. But if she's still feeling nice, she can put up some of Emma's flyers in the library. Joey is confused. Over to the boiler room. Pacey's trying to sell someone named Stan when Audrey walks in looking for him. He intercepts her, and when she tries to kiss him in the bullpen, he hustles her into the conference room. She starts whining that she wouldn't have come over if he would take her calls, which he can't because he's at work, being on the phone. She would have waited, except her news is too important. Emma invited her to join her band, which, you know, again, no, she didn't. Leave the singer that you've already been rehearsing with. The gig is tonight, but apparently a few hours worth of rehearsal is enough for Emma, whom Audrey says in the next breath is a control freak about the band, such that if Audrey doesn't nail the performance tonight, Emma will probably kick her out. Pacey looks happy and relieved, not only that Audrey got this win, but possibly because it gives her something to focus on that is not him. But yes, of course, he will be there tonight. Back to Worthington, Joey's giving her presentation on Lolita. Hetson interrupts to complain about how bored he is and to ask a clarifying question. Clip 20.
When Homer gets called away for that urgent phone call, he returns to find Lolita doing what with the likes of Claire Quilty?
Playing tennis.
What kind of tennis?
Good tennis.
Well,
my God, yes. I fucking hate this entire class so much. I hate Hetson. I hate the literature that they pick to talk about and make parallels with, like Lolita.
Yeah.
That should be a third rail for this show. No. Yeah. Good tennis? Huh? And why is she giving a presentation?
Well, it seems like everyone's giving presentations. We're just only seeing hers because she's in the opening credits. Like,
well, yeah, but why is any of the students doing that?
It's a combination lecture and seminar, perhaps. Who knows?
I had to give
them all the time, so I don't know. Hetson accuses Joey of not having read the book. He asks anyone else to answer his question, and when Eddie, who did come, finally raises his hand, Hetson says Eddie always knows, even if he rarely volunteers. Eddie quietly says the characters are playing doubles. Hetson is pleased and tells Joey to resume boring them all to death. Clip 21.
Hey, you know, maybe if you laid off her for 2 seconds at a time, she might not be so nervous.
Boy, every other student in this class must be so happy they spent this money to bear witness as Joey gets alternately abused and defended and the rest of them just get to laugh. Awful.
This is my notes. Every week, like, someone needs to go to the head of the department, which is not Wilder anymore, I assume.
Who knows?
And just be like, look, this guy is no. Like, I need to drop this class and be put in another one with no penalty. This is fucked up.
Yeah. But apparently Hetson and Eddie have some kind of business between the two of them. Clip 22.
What was that? A little criticism of my teaching techniques? Because I have to say, I've always considered myself pretty lenient, pretty willing to overlook certain things that other more traditional by-the-book teachers might not appreciate.
Whatever.
Oh, you don't agree? I'm ready to make this a larger discussion anytime you are. In fact, I've been ready for weeks now.
Am I teaching here or what? Because the devil's thing is actually very important.
I know. That's why I brought it up.
If it's important, why didn't you know when he asked about it?
Yeah. And if he has an issue with Eddie being there, that's a matter for the registrar.
Yes, it is. It just would have made a better scene if we had seen the two of them by themselves having a negotiation about Eddie, like, stealing learning. Instead, ask him out via Joey, whatever. Hetson asked her why, circa 1940, did a well-known Russian emigre writer named Vladimir Sirin cease to exist? Joey impotently flips through her note cards. Eddie glares at Hetson until Hetson calls on him, calling him Joey's well-prepared doppelganger, which not really, but Eddie does know the answer.
What that means.
Vladimir Sirin never existed. Clip 23.
Never existed? You mean he was a shadow? A shade? A double, perhaps? Someone passing himself off as someone else?
Yeah, you could say that, or you could just say it was a pen name.
You could, but a secret identity nonetheless. I'm sorry. This seems a little off topic for you.
No, I'm just saying, I get the point.
But do the rest of them?
Do they need to?
You tell me.
Well, personally, I think the question is moot. But if it really bothers you that much, I'll go.
Good. Great. Can we get back to class?
Yes. Because everyone else now has to be like, wait, are these two fucking? Because I thought it was him and Joey, but...
Yeah. Also, I don't care who's fucking. I actually went on financial aid for this, and it's you fighting with some pretentious dipshit all the time instead of actually teaching the syllabus. Mm-hmm. Fuck off.
Also, why is Lolita coming after Portnoy's complaint?
Oh, yeah.
How is this course constructed? Whatever.
Yeah.
Hetson gives Eddie a faint smile of satisfaction and doesn't stop Eddie from leaving. But Joey abandons her presentation to run after Eddie and ask what that was about. And he tells her to mind her own business. Thank you. She should. She won't, but she should. At Hell's Kitchen, Joey is quizzing Emma about Eddie. No, he's apparently not working tonight. No, Emma doesn't know where he lives, except that it's hours away by transit. Joey is surprised he doesn't live on campus, and Emma asks why he would. Joey didn't think he was a student at Worthington, did she? He just reads a lot. Joey heads to the back to try to look up private information about Eddie that he did not want her to know since he did not give it to her and that she has no right to, but she does manage to wish Emma luck at the gig tonight. Emma teases that she will have a surprise, and then it's time for the show. Jen makes her way backstage where an anxious Audrey asks if Pacey is there. Jen's not sure because the place is so packed, and then notices that Audrey seems a bit tense, deciding for some reason this is the moment to bring up what happened the other night. Audrey claims not to remember, and there's no time for Jen to press it because then Emma pops her head in to say the crowd is sufficiently drunk and they're on. As they head for the stage, Emma tells Audrey if she screws this up, Emma will kill her. And considering how packed the venue is, the crowd applauses very tepid when Audrey gets on the mic, exhibiting far less stage presence or talent than when she jumped up with Charlie's band in the season 5 premiere. Clip 24.
We are the Hells Bells, and we thought we would play a few songs for you now. You know, something soothing, something relaxing, something...
I mean, it's bad, but it has exactly that, like, Disney Channel teen show Courtney Love energy that yes. is called for here. Mm-hmm. Only Busy could have put this over, I feel. So
it's true.
Like,
yes.
I don't care, but respect for her performance.
Yeah. I mean, I would love it to be a little more on tune, but I agree. This does sound like someone who just joined the band 3 hours ago. Mm-hmm. So fine. Then we have to sadly return to Joey. She has just rung the buzzer outside Eddie's when he appears next to her, demanding to know why she's there. She wanted to talk to him about class today, but he says he's not really in that class anymore. She tells him she knows he is not really a student, which I would say he was a student. He just wasn't registered. He was learning.
Yeah, he wasn't enrolled.
Right.
Not the same thing.
Yeah. Joey doesn't get what it was all for, which, you know, to learn? He doesn't say that. And when she feebly asks to come in for some water, he opens the door and she goes in without an invitation. Upstairs, he spits in a mug before filling it with water and giving it to her. And if you think I'm joking, there is a gif in the visual aids. He really did. Clip 25.
So my presentation actually went okay. Except he left.
He doesn't care.
I mean, I just... went in there and I...
Uh-huh. And congratulations, Joey. I'm happy for you. Yeah, I'm sure you're only seconds away from breaking through Hedson's crusty exterior, earning his undying respect, and graduating magna cum laude. Or you could just save yourself a lot of trouble and sleep with the man.
Is it just me, or do you react this nicely to everyone who's trying to help you? What, no response?
No, so you're gonna have to give me a second here. I am still trying to process the condescending notion that help is actually required.
Oh, you don't think it's possible I could understand?
No, I don't. Look, Joey, I'm sorry I didn't turn out to be the person you thought I was. But you know what? Probably not too wise to invest that much in people you barely know.
Oh, I haven't invested anything in you.
Oh, yeah? Then why are you here? See, it seems to me that you're wasting valuable time that would be better spent trying to get back with that preppy boyfriend of yours. If he'll have you.
You know what? Remember when you told me to tell you when you were being a jerk?
Yeah, you could have saved yourself a lot of trouble by just calling first.
I guess it didn't seem like trouble at the time.
Shut up!
You were on the T for like 3 hours is A. B, shut up. C, he's right. You are being condescending.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you let her in? What is wrong with you? She's not that hot. No one is.
No. Later, the Hells Bells are doing a screamy girls just want to have fun. Michelle Williams, I'm going to say, reacts to her with real life love for her wonderful real life friend, more so than appreciation for this particular song performance.
Mm-hmm.
Joey finds Jen in the crowd and marvels that Audrey's fronting the band like she has not seen her do that many times before. Backstage afterward, Emma admits that the crowd did love them. Audrey asks where Pacey is. Joey and Jen's faces fall, and Emma shakes her head in disgust. And walking back to the apartment together, Audrey and Emma establish that it's right across the street from Hell's Kitchen, in case that's relevant later. Audrey sincerely thanks Emma for giving her a chance. Emma jokes that she better not hug her for it, because Audrey's pig of a boyfriend would enjoy it too much. But when she opens the door, they see Pacey has fallen asleep on the couch in his work clothes. Emma leaves them alone, and when Audrey startles him awake, Pacey takes a second to realize he missed the show. He asks how to make it up to her, but she just listlessly asks if he can drive her home, and there's a long beat as they both decide not to break up right now, but both clearly knows it is imminent. I have not watched ahead. I'm just guessing. Joey is closing the bar when Eddie arrives from his apartment a million miles away. Instead of just being appreciative that someone came all the way there to help her, she snits that it's kind of condescending for him to think he could help her. When she finally pauses in her annoying banter, he tells her his impersonation of a Worthington student started by accident. He was reading under a tree and a Shakespeare class kind of assembled around him. He was reading Moby Dick that particular day, but did read all of Shakespeare later. Clip 26.
I see, and since it was so easy, you just kept doing it.
Yeah, it prevents me from deliberately stepping into the street and methodically knocking people's hats off.
Moby Dick, right?
Hey, maybe you're not as dumb as Hedson thinks you are.
Let's not go crazy.
Yeah, really. Lie detected.
Honestly, the only reason I would read Moby Dick at this point, because I am not from here and I didn't have to take American Lit, would be to get the references to it that are in screen projects, because they are many.
Yeah.
Did you have to read it?
No.
Oh,
and good. Won't. Fuck off. Too long. I would prefer not to.
I probably won't either. That one I did read.
Ruby, really, I'm also a dick.
Yes.
Girlfriend, what is up with you? So angry, girlfriend.
I'm still mad that I had to read King Lear like 5 different times.
Fair enough. I guess I did do it 3 times. Wow. Anyway, Joey says she only came by that night to apologize. She felt like it was her fault that he got caught today. Clip 27.
Hedson wouldn't have singled you out if you weren't trying to be so nice to me.
Nice? You thought I was trying to be nice to you?
Yeah. That seemed kind of obvious.
Wrong.
Wrong?
Yes, that wasn't me being nice. That was me showing off. You know, you disappoint me, Potter.
I do.
Yes. How are we supposed to learn anything today, people? You didn't do your groundwork, did you?
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't.
Just fuck. No one cares.
They don't even kiss. I mean, come on. No. Give us something. Give us some reason to be sitting through all this bullshit. I also would like to see some consequences for how sloppy Joey's schoolwork has been this year, including getting to class at Hedson's late every single time. But I guess it's not happening now because that's the end of the episode. Let's name our episode MVP.
Yeah.
I'll say Emma for having a good eye for talent.
I'm going to say Audrey because she ripped it up and the performance by Ms. Phillips was very good. I wish they hadn't assassinated this character quite as much as they have, but every now and then you could see glimmers of the original free and easy Audrey. And that was one of those times this episode.
Least valuable player. Joey, mind your own business, for the love of God.
Freeman, stop messing with the students. This is a you problem, not a Jack problem.
Actually, also, Hedson, you stop messing with the students, too.
Yeah, yeah. Next time on Again With This, the final season's Halloween episode features a haunting of Dawson by a murdered actress's ghost, a zombie, wholesome TV raves in 2002, and the death of Audrey and Pacey's relationship. And the scares keep coming in our visual aids. We grab the most important / terrifying screenshots and GIFs for every episode of this podcast. They're all on the website, againwiththispodcast.com. That's where all of our archives live too, so come on by. I'm horror movie Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is cool professional Tara Ariano, and she's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is doing the despising. Talk to you next time.
Would you like a soda pop, Mr. Leary?